You are about to witness history in the making. Despite the world's highest living standards, the average American remained vaguely discontent, aware that his goal of a better way of life had still not been fully realized. There was something missing.
There's this awful gap in our lives just because we don't have... Oh, but why talk about it?
It's just that... Oh, I keep hoping someone can find a way to...
Don't be a fool, Mary. You know that's impossible.
Oh, I know. It's just that...
Gad, it's ironic. With all our technology and industrial know-how, we still don't have the one thing that could give us a better way of life.
It's the Forgotten Filmcast.
What about Anne? She knows how to have a good time and how to make the fellow with her relax, have fun too. Yes, that's what a boy likes. He wants to know he's appreciated.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 202 of the Forgotten Filmcast. My name is Todd Liebenow, and thanks for joining me for this look at the movies that time forgot. On this episode, I'll be joined by Matt Poirier, from direct-to-video connoisseur, to discuss a 1995 film that some call Die Hard at a beauty pageant, starring Shannon Tweed, Robert Davi, and Andrew Dice Clay, directed by Paul Lynch. It's No Contest. But first...
Now, in order to understand...
The Forgotten Filmcast.
We must go back many, many years.
Welcome to your favorite drive-in theater and a sparkling new season. Watch our screen and local newspapers for all the fine shows coming this way. Show after show will feature the latest hits, the biggest stars for fun-filled, pleasure-packed evenings. Relax, come as you are, and spend an enjoyable night out with the entire family. No parking problems, no babysitting problems. And there are always tasty snacks at our modern refreshment stand.
Thanks, folks. And once again, welcome back.
There are words men live by, words of strength, of wisdom, and of peace. We urge you to find the spiritual comfort and guidance we all so greatly need by attending your place of worship regularly.
Here's a choice of food and drink to satisfy anyone and everyone. You'll find something to please you to add to your evening's enjoyment. Something to please all tastes and age groups.
Thank you.
drive away your worries and cares at this drive-in theater, where you will see the finest motion pictures of all time soon to be released. Drama, comedy, adventure, excitement, something for everyone. Here's a brief glimpse of some of the truly fine pictures we've scheduled in the near future.
It all began in a peaceful community, a place that had never known evil until now. But 20 years ago, in the stillness beneath these waters, something happened. And now, its deadly spawn has been released. Coming up from the depths, out into the light. Slugs. First, they got into the water system. Now, they'll get into your system.
Oh, my God!
They ooze.
There's something down there that's killing people.
They slime.
We got a new dead body showing up every 10 minutes.
They kill.
We're dealing with a mutant form of slug here, a kind that eats meat.
It has 3 or 4 rows of teeth.
Don't turn on the tap. Don't go in the basement.
No, get out of it! No, no, no.
Steer clear of the sewers. And whatever you do, don't make out while your parents aren't home. Slugs. It may be the most shocking movie you will ever see. Slugs.
And now, on with the show.
Just learn it. Deviate from the script. One word, a girl dies.
Captain Hendricks.
This is Sharon Bell. She's the host of the show.
Miss Bell, are you and the other girls all right?
Hotel is mined. Explosives have been linked to the intruder alarm system. $10 million in diamonds will be delivered to this building in 5 hours, or a new Miss Galaxy will be elected by process of elimination.
Thank you.
Miss Bell, can you let me talk to whoever's in charge of...
Hello, who is this?
Cut the crap! You know I can't guarantee delivery of 10 million in diamonds in 5 hours.
If I might be so bold as to ask you to focus on the parking lot for one moment, please.
Zelensky! You get the bomb squad out there checking every car.
Don't show your fear.
You're just the bodyguard. I'm the captain here. Impressive. It still doesn't alter the fact that I don't have $10 million in diamonds here.
Then stop passing a hat around, or get me somebody who can meet my demands. Get her out of here. Vic? Cappuccino, please.
All right, our movie this time is No Contest from 1995, and joining me to discuss this film is Matt Poirier from Direct-to-Video Connoisseur. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. I got to admit, you kind of delve into a realm of cinema that I find intriguing, though I haven't visited much myself. So we'll get to that in a minute. But first, why don't you take a moment here, tell everybody a bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so Direct-to-Video Connoisseur, it's a site that I started in the late 2000s, I think 07, May of 07. And it was really just my friends and I, you know, growing up, we just had this thing about watching, you know, the sort of direct-to-video movies at the movie, you know, at the video store. It was kind of like, you know, those tended to be the ones that nobody had seen in the group, right? Because everybody had gone to the theater to see movies. And we just sort of started to gravitate towards them. I called it Direct-to-Video Connoisseur because I had this idea in my head of like an Alistair Cook type person, type character, you know, with the ascot and doing like masterpiece theater, but watching Dolph Lundgren movies. Little did I know that I would get like directors who were angry with me or something, you know, using the term like, oh, you think you're such a connoisseur, and it's like it was tongue in cheek, it was a joke. But the other thing, the other thing I learned is that connoisseur is difficult to spell, and so it was really hard for me to sell the site to people because they'd be like, when I would look up on Google how people found the site, there'd be all these different spellings of the word connoisseur that they would somehow get there. So Will from Exploding Helicopter said the best way is just to double every consonant. That's probably the best way to spell it up.
See?
But yeah, exactly. So we've been doing that for a while. We started the podcast in 2014, took a break. I kind of went on an unofficial hiatus for about 5 years, not really planning to, four or five years, and then brought both back. And so we still do the podcast. It runs roughly every week. And then the site, I'm still posting usually like a review a week. I try my best to do that.
Excellent. Well, like I said, I mean, I've always been intrigued by direct-to-video stuff, but there's a lot of times where I haven't, you know, just pulled the trigger on some of these films because, you know, probably because there's these other blockbusters that I'm going, oh, I should watch that first, you know, but I've always found it intriguing. I mean, probably because, you know, having been someone who was a teenager in the height of the video store era in the 80s and then moving into my adult life in the 90s, seeing all these things that would flood the shelves during that time. And I especially remember, you know, kind of the 90s really ramping up in that, where you'd go to the video store and you'd see these movies that were this direct-to-video stuff, and it would have, like, for example, the star of our movie today, Shannon Tweed, or somebody like that, you know, and I just was always intrigued and thought, well, somebody must watch these movies.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a funny thing, because it was like, you know, like you talk about that, the height of the video store, it was kind of like before Blockbuster came in and sort of just took out all the mom and pops. You know, you had these mom and pops who would like go through that catalog of like, you know, what they would buy for their store, and they would just kind of grab all kinds of things. And so there was like this market for it. I mean, you mentioned Shannon Tweed. The other thing is that, you know, because cable was a big part for direct to video as well. And
sure.
I remember a friend of mine, his parents had a Descrambler box, right? So it was like sort of an illegal cable box that you'd buy off the back of a truck at the traffic circle or something. And it had all the channels, including the pay-per-view channel. And his dad would watch erotic thrillers. And so we were probably too young to be seeing erotic thrillers, but we'd get home from school and he'd be watching a Shannon Tweed film, you know, on there. We'd be like, huh, this is interesting, you know? And so that's another kind of area where I got into those kinds of movies. And Shannon Tweed definitely was played a big part in that. The site itself turned into almost entirely action, though, because when I was posting the reviews, you know, I wanted it to be kind of all genres, but the action ones were the ones that really got a lot of engagement. And those were the ones that people would be like, hey, you know, did you watch this movie? Have you seen this one from this guy? And so it's interesting how the site kind of evolved like that, but it was supposed to be all genres of direct-to-video. It just sort of became action.
Well, I guess from your standpoint here as a connoisseur of these direct-to-video films, I mean, what makes a good direct-to-video movie? Because, I mean, they run the gamut. You know, you can have some that are hidden gems and others that you just go, well, I see why this just got plopped on a videotape, you know?
Well, the very first rule for me is length. I think anything over 90 minutes is borrowed time. But I also kind of follow the Roger Corman idea that 88 minutes is a great length, because for him, he didn't like 90 minutes because that would lead into a 12th reel. So, of course, at that time, thinking about, you know, not video, but rather, you know, selling it to theaters, right? You had 11 reels was a lot cheaper. So that's, you know, 88 minutes, that's a good number. You know, if they get longer than that, that to me, it kind of affects how the film goes. And then I think the other thing is if it's easier to not take itself too seriously, but if it's just kind of fun, you know, like a lot of explosions or a lot of action or whatever, that always tends to work. Or if it's like a horror film, a lot of really goofy kills or just good kills, that kind of does it well too. If there's not a lot of dead time, so a quick runtime, not a lot of dead time, and then of course names and using the names well, I think. So if you get some great actors in there, and you know, if they're being used well, that's always a good thing.
It's interesting you mentioned the names, because I think there's probably different perceptions when it comes to who is a name when it comes to the direct-to-video market, because I was going to ask you kind of about who are the big names now when it comes to that. But also, I mean, one of the things I've noticed is that there are these people who are A-list stars that have been spending quite a bit of time in the direct-to-video area. I mean, you know, I'm intrigued when you see, like, I mean, there's just tons of, for example, Bruce Willis when he was still acting. You know, Bruce would show up in just all these different movies. And, you know, you've got your folks like Nicolas Cage or John Travolta, even the likes of like John Cusack. I'm going, what happened to John Cusack that he's in some of these movies? But I mean, beyond those guys, then there's these, you know, other folks that really have built their careers in the direct-to-video marketplace. So, I mean, who are the names we should be looking for?
Boy, that's a good one. Well, I mean, Dolph is kind of the one. I always kind of consider Dolph to be the Babe Ruth of direct-to-video action because he's just so many great ones. So he's kind of like the big name. That's always a big one. And the thing with Dolph is you can get back from like the 90s through the 2000s, 2010s, and just get all kinds of fun movies with him. He's definitely a great name. You know, when you talk about like those big names, right, like the Bruce Willises, you know, even like a De Niro, things like that, that's where you kind of get into like that Emmett Furlough oasis. So Randall Emmett was this producer who's kind of known now for being on Vanderkamp or Vanderpump Rules or something like that. He created this system where it was like, what was it like he would pay people like Bruce Willis like millions of dollars to just be in one movie and then sell it, you know, internationally. And that's how you started getting these big names in direct to video movies. But before that, it really wasn't, you know, it was more like if your career was on the skids, you'd start doing direct to video. That was kind of the process. And and you could kind of see it with an actor like a Mark Dacascos, who's a really great direct to video guy, where like a couple of movies that could have gone one way or the other would have made him a big star or made him direct to video. Like, you know, the Double Dragon movie, I think, is a great example of one that had that one been better. Maybe, you know, Dacascos is your Van Damme star as opposed to being a direct to video star.
Interesting. Well, it is an intriguing realm for sure. I always say I'm going to dip my toe further into these waters, and I need to make more of an effort. But let's get going with this movie we have here today from 1995. This is No Contest. And this one is directed by a guy named Paul Lynch. He's a Canadian director, probably most famous for a pretty iconic horror movie, a slasher, Prom Night, the original, which I got to admit, I know this is considered a slasher classic by a lot of folks. I am not the biggest fan of the original Prom Night. I am much more a fan of the sequel. The first sequel, Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2, is bonkers. It is completely bonkers, and I love it. He also directed the 1982 horror film Humongous, a number of other things here and there. Also a lot of TV shows, a lot of TV episodes. Some of the famous ones he's done: Star Trek The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Beauty of the Beast, In the Heat of the Night, Xena the Warrior Princess, Baywatch Nights. Did a lot of direct to syndication stuff there. So yeah, this guy's been very busy. Now this film, it begins with a beauty pageant, the Miss Galaxy competition, which is being held at a brand new luxury hotel, which is just about to open. It's not having guests yet, but they're kind of kicking off with this beauty pageant event. The host of this beauty pageant is Sharon Bell, played by previously mentioned Shannon Tweed. She is an action movie star and a former Miss Galaxy winner herself. Also on the scene here is Sergeant Crane, played by Robert Davi, who is the personal bodyguard of one of the contestants, Miss USA, Candy Wilson, who is not only a contestant, but happens to be the daughter of a powerful U.S. senator. Now, right as the winner of the competition is announced, a mysterious man walks onto the stage and promptly takes control of the situation, says he's going to have some demands, and to prove he's serious about stuff, he shoots the winner and takes the other ladies hostage, including the host of the show. This man, we later learn, is one Oz Bryce, played by Andrew Dice Clay, and he has a team of goons, including such actors as Nicholas Campbell and Rowdy Roddy Piper, and they are after a fortune in diamonds. And they have rigged the whole hotel with explosives. They've put explosive wristbands on all the girls. And basically, you know, the whole thing's going to go boom if their demands aren't met. Now, meanwhile, Crane is outside. He starts to coordinate with the local police. Eventually, though, the action star, Sharon Bell, manages to escape after fake seducing one of the goons. But now she is trapped in the hotel as well, because the explosives are rigged to the doors and stuff. She can't get out. The cops can't get in. So now it is up to her to try and assist with taking down the crooks from the inside. So some folks have called this one Die Hard at a Beauty Pageant. That's only partially true, though. I'm sure we'll get into that in a moment. But I'm going to let Matt get us started. Give us a few of your thoughts on No Contest.
Well, so this one, as we talked about, like about, you know, direct-to-video movies, what makes a good direct-to-video movie? This one breaks rule number one, right? Because it's longer. It's like in the 100-minute range. And I think that was the ultimate problem for me, is that like it never wanted to end. It just was like, okay, here's our final confrontation. Oh no, you know, Andrew Dice Clay is escaping. You know, and
the third act does carry on a bit. Yeah,
yeah. I think if it was tighter, I think I would have liked it more. I think I liked that they tried to do some unique things with the Die Hard in a paradigm. Some of those things I wasn't as big a fan of. Like, I think Shannon Tweed's character being the fly in the ointment, she needed to be the fly in the ointment sooner. It was kind of like one of these things where it was like this sort of like, I don't know how to describe it. It was like we were just waiting for it to happen. We knew she was going to be the fly in the ointment, but it took them like 45 minutes, I think, of film to get her there. Mm-hmm. Usually the fly in the ointment is like immediately, like usually the fly in the ointment is like doing something while the hostage is taking place. Like maybe she's in the bathroom or she's, you know, making a wardrobe change or something like that. And then suddenly she hears an explosion or a gunshot and she's like, oh boy, okay, well, I better not go where that's happening. And then she's the fly in the ointment. I think that also could have been a little bit tighter as well. But it overall, it's like, I don't want to say it is what it is, but it is kind of one of those, like, it does the trick. It just, I think it would have been better if it was shorter.
I am on board with what you're saying there. I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's a great film. It's a C-grade Die Hard ripoff. But still, I was entertained by it. It's got plenty of missteps, but it has this goofy charm to it. I think you're absolutely right with the idea that it takes too long for Shannon Tweed to kind of take over and be that fly in the ointment. I mean, really, I was a little confused in that first 40 minutes or so of the movie, because Shannon Tweed's name is the first in the credits. I thought, okay, well, she's the star. She's going to be the one that is, you know, all the action is hinging on here. But in that first 40 minutes or so of the film, it really feels like they're setting up Robert Davi to be the John McClane of this film. Because like you said, he's kind of, as the whole incident starts to happen, you know, when Andrew Dice Clay storms in and all that stuff, Davi's out taking a cigarette break. And you think, okay, well, this is going to be what separates him from everybody else. And then he's going to be the one creeping around in the rafters and all that stuff and trying to take down the terrorists. But no, I mean, he actually then gets ejected from the building by the crooks. You know, I'm like, wait a second. They literally just shove him out with the rest of the audience. I was like, first of all, these guys are pretty trigger happy. I would have thought they would have shot the guy. But, you know, he's like then on the outside of the building and he basically becomes more like the Al. I mean, if we're making Die Hard comparisons, he's more like the Al character in this film, slightly combined with his actual character from Die Hard.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah, he's good. There is a little bit of you're right. It's like a mix of Al and Johnson, of one of the two Johnson and Johnsons. Right. And it's and I mean, the other thing, too, I think to your point about Davi is that, you know, Davi and Andrew Clay are the only two non-Canadians in this film. And and so that was another piece where I thought, okay, well, maybe there's going to be something going on between those two.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is odd just the way that things are structured there with, you know, kind of shifting focus as to who is going to be our hero of the story. I do think once Shannon Tweed becomes the centerpiece of things, I think it the film gains more momentum. And I did appreciate that. I mean, it's weird because, you know, we've said early on that a lot of people consider this Die Hard at a beauty pageant. And I struggle to say that because the beauty pageant angle gets dropped not even 15 minutes into the movie. I mean, basically, we had the setup with the beauty pageant and Andrew Dice Clay comes on the scene and shoots the winner and all that kind of stuff. But basically, then he takes hostages. And from there, it's not Die Hard at a beauty pageant. It's just Die Hard, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And like, even just like the beauty pageant aspect of it, like, it's really just a hotel. It's not like,
right,
there's not like you know, sets and things like that. And of course, the women themselves, they don't really talk much. I think there's a little bit. Polly Shannon is the Miss USA one who's being held hostage because her dad, the senator, has the connections. And she mentions a little bit about how her dad pushes her to do these pageants. But it's like just kind of like a perfunctory sort of note in the script. It's not really like, hey, these are beauty pageant people, and they don't, you know, and they don't really do anything beauty pageant-y. You know, like it would have been kind of fun to like dab someone with a tiara or something like that. And none of that really happens either.
The only one that's really like that is there's the one girl who has got long fingernails, which they reference early in the film. You know, one of the other contestants goes, oh, I love your nails and all that. And then, you know, kind of gradually as they're in this hostage situation, you see her kind of filing her nails. And at one point she uses that to attack one of the bad guys, which I thought that was clever. I was into that. But you're right in that all of these girls are pretty much just kind of generic beauty pageant contestant. I would have really liked it if they had put a little bit more character in them. I mean, like the nails thing, that's good. That's something distinguishing about that character. And, you know, it follows through the movie and it has a payoff. That's great. But I think if we could have had something a little bit more with these other contestants, establishing their personalities a bit, you could have had like a talent competition as part of the beauty pageant. And then they could have somehow used those talents to, you know, take down the bad guys or something like that.
Yeah, that would have been perfect. And I think also like the talents being something based on where they're from, you know, like we had a Miss Canada. And of course, this movie is all Canada. You know, it's like, again, it's only like a couple stars that aren't Canadian in the film. And it would have been funny if they just like played up on that a little bit. Like maybe, you know, she does something like she, you know, kills him with a loonie. Maybe she throws a loonie or she has some loonies in her purse. And she, you know, she, you know, something like that. But you're right. Like they don't really do anything with where they're from. I mean, there's a Miss Germany played by Chandra West, who's originally from Alberta. So I get like maybe they thought maybe she tried a German accent and it didn't sound good. So they said, let's just have you pretend that, you know,
they all sound American. Yeah,
right. Exactly. It would have been kind of fun to have her, you know, just sort of, you know, pronounce her W's as V's and just, you know, sort of, you know, and again, like you said, do something like actually German, you know, like as part of the talent contest. Really what they do is they just go, oh, let's just do like the swimsuit, I think, thing. And they talk, it's like they combine the swimsuit thing with the what would you do if you win, you know, and the whole right. I would want world peace kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's just, it all just sort of happens. And it almost makes you think like, okay, because they're just getting this stuff over with so quickly, we're going to get right into the action here. But then it sort of grinds to a halt a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I appreciated that they actually moved through the quote unquote competition pretty quickly. Yeah. Because you do want to get the action going. You want to establish the stakes and get the bad guys in there. So, you know, I don't think it's a problem that we, you know, move through that pageant stuff pretty quickly. And the entrance of Andrew Dice Clay is pretty dramatic and all that. And we think, okay, the ball is rolling here, but you're right. They then take the hostages and the girls sit around a lot while the bad guys kind of talk to each other and Davi gets with the police and all that stuff. And it's really not until we get that moment where Shannon Tweed escapes that it really takes off. And as cheesy as it is, I like that moment when Shannon Tweed escapes. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it's the classic play of she's, you know, fake seducing one of the bad guys and they go off to the swimming pool area and such. And it is a creepy sequence because this guy that plays Vic.
Oh, Nicholas Campbell from Da Vinci's Inquest.
Yes, Nicholas Campbell. And I mean, he's got this great slimy look to him. So, yes. You know, it's just one of those scenes that makes your skin crawl when you see this really just slimy looking guy making the moves on this gorgeous woman, Shannon Tweed. And then it builds, you know, that, all right, they've planted the seeds. We saw the posters for her kung fu movies early in the movie and stuff. So we know she's going to attack him somehow, and she does. And I mean, Shannon Tweed's no Jackie Chan, but I mean, there is a wonderful cheesy charm to seeing her karate chop this guy.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I think that was sort of the sense of like, okay, this thing's going to really start moving. And it does get a little bit more, you know, it does move a little bit faster after that. Then we start to get more, you know, of Tweed kind of as the fly in the ointment. The other thing I liked that was a little refreshing about this is that Tweed's character is not like a John McClane. Or like, you know, whenever Don the Dragon Wilson does these, like he did one Terminal Rush that also has Roddy Piper, where it's like this person is like X, you know, whatever things, or they're a cop or whatever, and they're just an expert mm-hmm. at everything. I liked that she was a novice at this, and she wasn't even sure like that she had the ability to kill anybody, that she, you know, attacking somebody took you know, took some metal from her to be able to do it. And I liked that approach where it was like, okay, you know, she needs Davi to kind of help her through this because she's not really sure she can do this, but she's going to do it. That I really appreciated. And it was great, you know, the Da Vinci's Inquest guy, you're talking about, you know, straight to syndication. I think that was like a show that was aired on CBC in Canada, but it was syndicated here in the U.S. on like, you know, around the same time you'd be watching like Highlander or the series or something like that. And so, yeah, it was kind of great seeing him kind of get thrown around a bit.
Yeah, I agree with you with that approach to Shannon Tweed's character. I mean, I do think she maybe gets a little too weepy at points in it. I would have liked to see maybe a little bit more confidence out of her because, I mean, you got to figure, all right, she has some skills. She's had success as an action star. So, you know, she must have some degree of confidence in her abilities. But it was, you know, nice that she, you know, realized she was in a situation that was different from the controlled environment of being on the movie set and that she didn't exactly know if she was going to be able to do anything effective here. So, you know, I thought that was a nice angle. I also liked that her character is pretty crafty, you know, in terms of just being able to roll with the situation and improvise and come up with some pretty clever solutions when she's got some problems. I mean, just the fact that she's able to kind of tune in to the little key code on the explosive wristbands and remember what the code is to disable them. I thought that was, I'm like, well, she's doing better than I could on that. I wouldn't be able to remember that. But then there's other moments where like she really has to improvise. Like she at one point breaks the telephone that she's got, which this is the mid-90s, so cell phones are new. Okay. She's got a flip phone with a pull-out antenna, and the antenna breaks off, and so she can't call Davi anymore. And so what she do? She goes into the garage, and she pops the hood on a car and pulls out some wires and shoves them into the phone and makes it work. She's able to call Davi back up again. And I was like, well, I don't know if that is the way that flip phones actually work, but for this movie, it worked for me.
Yeah, I agree completely because, right, we're used to flip phones, like, when they did have the antenna, it was like a Nextel or something, and by that point, it was just almost like for show that you were pulling the, you know, like, nobody really needed the antenna anymore.
Yeah.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, too, I was joking because Polly Shannon, I didn't recognize her, you know, she was in a Dolph film called Direct Action, and I thought it was weird. I was like, wow, you know, I'd seen the movies too, you know, close together, and I was like, she's playing a high school student or high school student in this movie, and then she's like a detective in Direct Action. What's going on here? And then I realized, like, oh yeah, they're way far apart, and really, it's only the cell phone technology that tells me how far apart the movies are when they're being made. Right? It's like, you know, it is kind of one of those markers when you watch these direct-to-video movies because, yeah, the cell phones. You kind of long for a nice Zach Morris, which is always fun to see one of those in a movie like this.
One of the other things I really liked where Shannon Tweed's character kind of improvises, and I thought made for one of the best action moments of the film, is where she goes to the ice machine and puts a bunch of ice in like a bag or a pillowcase or something like that, and then waits for the elevator to open up where Roddy Piper has, you know, a couple of the girls held hostage. The door opens up and she runs in there and starts just wailing on Roddy Piper with a bag full of ice. And I was like, that's really clever. And the scene is so brutal. I mean, you just hear the sound of those ice cubes crunching every time she hits Piper and the bag starts to get all bloody and stuff. And I was like, boy, I'm remembering that. If I'm ever in a problem in a hotel, I'm filling up a pillowcase with ice cubes and going to town.
Yeah, that was a really good, cause it, like you said, it spoke to her resourcefulness. It was a bit tonally off because it was a little darker. But of course, she also has that sequence where Roddy Piper catches her in the kitchen and he's like really, really menacing towards her. And he's got her by the throat and he's like, you know, it's really, really a rough scene. So you can kind of see how she'd want to get that revenge on him. Plus, he's such a big guy. You've really got to put some work into knocking him down. So someone her size would really have to do it. But that's like the other two pageant girls that had escaped, they were like trying to pull her off of it because she just kind of really went to work on it.
She wouldn't stop. Yeah. Right. No. Well, and I mean, it's weird too that Roddy Piper is the most menacing one here. And in some ways, I mean, it pains me to say, but I almost feel like he's a bit miscast. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love seeing Roddy Piper show up and stuff, but there's always just this kind of, I don't know. Usually with Roddy Piper, there's a bit of a sense of humor to him. That's part of his wrestling persona. And that's part of, you know, just where I'm used to seeing him in other things, is that there's just always kind of this little twinkle in the eye when it comes to Roddy Piper. And here he's playing it completely straight. He's basically, I mean, again, if we're going to go back to Die Hard comparisons again, he's the Alexander Gudinov character here. He's Carl in yeah. Die Hard. Okay. He's the hard as nails mercenary, you know, no bones about it. He doesn't care. He'll kill you if he needs to kill you, all that stuff. And for me, I don't know, that just didn't quite fit with Roddy Piper. I wanted that, you know, just little bit of a tongue-in-cheek twinkle that Roddy Piper usually has. It was very strange for me to see him playing it completely straight.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, kind of going back to sort of how I got into direct-to-video movies, I remember when I went to college, because my friends and I in high school watched all kinds of movies, and I remember meeting a guy in college, one of my classes, who we were talking about these kinds of movies. He was like saying how he and his friends wanted to watch every Roddy Piper direct-to-video movie. Like, that was like their mission.
Hell Comes to Frogtown is great. I mean,
yes, so many. And then he did a couple with Billy Blanks that were a lot of fun. And so, yeah, so he did a bunch of them. So when I went home that summer, of course, I told one of my buddies that we would do direct-to-video. I was like, we got to do this whole Roddy Piper quest thing. And so, but, you know, thinking about that, like, yes, most of the time he plays like this kind of fun, you know, character. And a great example is a movie called Terminal Rush that he does with Don Wilson, Don the Dragon Wilson. It's like, you know, it's Die Hard in Hoover Dam, essentially, is what it is. And so it's another Die Hard ripoff, but he plays the baddie in that. And he's got like his, like kind of like this, like bandit, like mask painted over his eyes, and he's just completely off the chain, just completely, just, you know, crazy bad, maniacal, goofy baddie, and it's so much fun. And so, to your point, right, that movie was more fun than this movie in that sense, that like you've got a really fun Roddy Piper baddie in it, whereas this one, he was darker, right? He was like, I'm going to, like, you know, he was like playing cards with the women and being like, oh, you were, you know, they were playing high or low. And, you know, if they got low, it was like, oh, you're going to die next. You know, it's like really, really, right, right. really serious.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, while we're at it, we should talk more about the bad guys in general, because I suppose when it comes to, you know, this type of film, I mean, a lot is riding on the bad guys. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you go back to, again, Die Hard, I mean, as much as I love Bruce Willis, right. John McClane, I mean, part of what makes Die Hard work is Alan Rickman.
Yes.
And I mean, I don't know where I'm trying to go here. I mean, our Rickman in this is Andrew Dice Clay, of all people. Yeah. And here's the thing. I have developed a weird respect for Andrew Dice Clay in recent years, because he has actually appeared in some films in recent years here while I'm going, wow, that is Andrew Dice Clay. I mean, Blue Jasmine, he's great. A Star is Born, really good in that movie. And I'm like, I never would have thought the guy had it in him. He can be a good actor when he wants to. I'm not sure that he's at that point here yet in 1995, but I think maybe of all the people in this movie, he's the one that realizes what the tone is that we're going for here with a direct-to-video Die Hard ripoff.
Yeah, I totally agree there. I mean, he wears the disguises. He, you know, I mean, when he kills Miss France at the beginning there, it just, like, you know, it's so completely just like, it's very much like Hans, you know, in in Die Hard, you know, killing hostages. You know, you're like the yuppie guy there who's like, come on, Hans, baby, give me a Coke here.
Hans Booby, yeah.
I'll help you out here, you know. And Willis is like, no, get away. Don't get out of there, you know, get away. And then Hans is like, no, okay. You know, or like, you know, what was it, the Hans where the whole quarterback is toast thing, you know, and he's like, hit him again, you know. And Bruce Willis is like, made your point, Hans, you made your point. I'll take it under advisement. Hit him again, you know. Andrew Dice Clay brings that energy for sure. I mean, of course, he calls himself Andrew Clay as a bid for seriousness, perhaps, that, you know, but he gets the, you're right, he gets the energy of what a baddie is supposed to be for this, and I definitely appreciated that. I had a lot of fun with him when he's menacing, or unlike Piper, like you said, who's like just menacing, and he's just, there is no fun to it. Andrew Dice Clay's character is kind of both, where he's fun and menacing, equal parts that you need here for a movie, a film like this.
Yeah, I think he's really relishing too in those opportunities to like deliver these one-liners that are going to end up in the trailer. You know, I mean, there's just so many lines sprinkled throughout this, and you know, it's the type of thing where you're going, okay, what's scripted, what was made up on the set, you know, because some of it you're kind of going, well, that was kind of cheesy, you know, that But I mean, still, I mean, it works for me. There's just this wonderful goofiness about his performance that I don't know. I thought it just struck the right tone for this type of film. Well, I mean, we went right to the villains. We should talk, you know, our other major players. I mean, we've talked about some of the things that they deliver in this, but I guess you know, what their role in the story is and such. But I mean, how do we think they do? I mean, let's actually start with Robert Davi. I guess I'll start by just saying Davi disappoints me a bit in this. I mean, I love seeing Davi show up in a movie. He's not given much to do in this movie.
Yeah, that's exactly the issue, I think. And I mean, and the funny thing is, like, when he does have stuff to do, it's really kind of over the top. Like, there's a scene where at the very end where the senator and another guy, they have to take a service elevator up to the roof to meet Andrew Dice Clay. So, you know, Davi's character, he's disabled, his leg, he has a problem with one of his legs, so he has a cane. He hooks the cane to the bottom of the service and just hangs from it as he's like going up all of these flights, which is just, it's like very like Batman, like old Batman, you know, which would be played for laughs in an old Batman, but we're supposed to be like, ooh, Davi's going to save the day kind of thing.
And it's like, how does he even hang on to that cane? It's got like this polished wood finished thing. It's like, you'd slip off that thing in less than a floor and a half, you know? I mean, give me a break. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, except for the end where I think they really do kind of try to give Davi a moment. And they're like, you know, we've got a big name. I mean, a comparatively big name here, and we really haven't given him anything to do. So we've got to give him something here in the final act, but otherwise he's on the phone most of the movie. And I'm just like, no, that's not the way you use Robert Davi.
Yeah, no, I totally, I mean, really, really where Robert Davi makes his money is as a baddie as well. And then it's like, okay, well, we've already got Andrew Dice Clay as the baddie. So then it's like, yeah, what do we do with Davi when he's not the baddie? It's what Davi commented on one of my reviews of a Dolph movie that he did, where I mentioned his character, he was playing a Brit and his accent came in and out. And he was like, actually, I did that on purpose. I wanted the accent to come in and out, which was really interesting. he responded like that. And so I know he takes these roles seriously. Like, he really goes into it thinking like he wants to really do something. But like you said, he didn't have a lot to sink his teeth into here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I never doubt that Davi isn't bringing his A game to stuff. I mean, he's one of those. I don't think I've ever sat down and watched a movie with Robert Davi and thought, well, he's phoning it in. I mean, despite the fact that he's on the phone for most of this movie. But I always think he's trying to give everything he can, no matter the size, no matter the budget of the movie that he's in. But yeah, in this one, they just could have given him more to do. All right. So Shannon Tweed. Shannon Tweed, I mean, of course, as we said before, a big name when it comes to direct-to-video movies. I mean, she was a Playmate of the Year, I think, way back. She married Gene Simmons. I can remember back in the 80s as she started showing up in movies. I remember the ads for Hot Dog the Movie, and the, you know, they on every ad for that, they said, and featuring Playmate of the Year, Shannon Tweed, you know. And I even got, when they closed Denver's last video store about 10 years or so ago. They were clearing everything out. They emptied out their basement, and I went there and bought some things, and they had all these old displays, and they had a tabletop display for Hot Dog the movie, and I bought it for like $2 because it has great artwork on it and stuff. So I've got that here in my basement. But but anyway, back to Shannon Tweed. A big name, you know, when it comes to these direct-to-video movies in the 90s. I mean, every 2 months she was showing up in another one of these. So, I mean, how is Shannon Tweed as John McClane? I mean, I assume you've seen her in other films. I guess what's your take on her in general and how she do here?
So, I mean, I thought she did well here, but I think similar to what you're talking about with Davi not having the material, you know, Shannon Tweed is really great as a comedic actress. She's in a movie called Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death, a movie with
yes, the high point on Bill Maher's resume. Yeah,
exactly. And she's really great in that. It's almost like a straight, you know, like the sort of the straight actor, mm-hmm. But also can do the comedy stuff. And it would have been really great to see her like playing up that part of it more. That like, you know, if this movie had more fun in it, she would have really, really played that aspect of it. So I think that would have been really cool to see there. But I think just the fact that she's even, you know that she gets to be the hero in a Die Hard movie, I think is just a really, really cool thing to see. And so I think, you know, again, you know, mostly erotic thrillers with Shannon Tweed. You know, she does some other stuff. I mean, there's a really great Western that she does, a trauma Western called Rowdy Girls that she's in with Julie Strain, which is a kind of a trip to see. But yeah, I liked seeing her in this. I thought it was kind of cool to have her be the fly in the ointment there. But yeah, I just would have liked it if the script and the material would have given her more range to have that comedy stuff in it.
Yeah, I can get that. I think there are some attempts at that. I mean, she has a few lines that are, I think, meant to be, you know, those kind of comedic zingers. I mean, like when she first, you know, gets a hold of Davi and the police on the phone, she has some line about needing a drink or something. I forget what it was exactly. You know, there are a few moments where they're attempting some comedy, but yeah, I mean, in general, I mean, the script is no great shakes. I mean, everybody's right. Got to kind of work with what they've got here. You know, there's awkward moments in the dialogue for sure. You know, just kind of the story structure has some weird moments. You know, everybody's kind of having to make the best of what they're given here. And some of them do better than others. I was perfectly fine with what Shannon Tweed was doing. I mean, she's never going to be an Oscar caliber actress. But I mean, I think for a film like this, she makes for a good centerpiece of things. And you know, certainly had me interested in what her character was going to do throughout.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest piece, right, is that I think for any of these Die Hard in a blank movies, right, there's sort of two pieces that you have to have. Is one, you got to have a really great villain, but then you've got to have a hero that you really want to root for, because you get what I always call the Destro effect from, you know, watching G.I. Joe as a kid growing up and always wanting to root for Destro because I thought he was such a cool baddie. That if the baddie is too cool, right, you root for the baddie to win over the good guy. I think a really great example of that is Bruce Campbell in Assault on Dome 4, where he was just such a great baddie that I didn't want to see him lose. So Tweed does a really great job of making it so we don't want to root for Andrew Dice Clay. And it does kind of teeter a bit, because Andrew Dice Clay is such a great baddie. There are some times where I'm like, oh, I want to see him get away with the diamonds. But, you know, Tweed gives us enough that we really want to see her win.
I want to throw out a few other names in the cast before we hit on a few other things here. Just some of the supporting players that are kind of on the outside. I like the police captain in this, a guy named James Purcell. This guy is a walking heart attack. And I mean, he's just, it is a fun, over-the-top performance that I think this guy knows what he's doing and kind of sending up kind of the, you know, the always angry police captain type of characters that you see in action movies. So I liked the tone that he was bringing to things. I also really like this actress named Judith Scott, who plays the officer who's like the communications specialist working along with him. She's got this kind of fun spunk to her, and, you know, kind of where she's like, she knows she's the smartest person in the room, but is going to be kind of sly about it the whole time. So I liked what she was giving as well.
Yeah, and interesting, those are two of the other non-Canadians in the film as well, Judith Scott and James Purcell. So it was kind of interesting. And I agree, like, especially her character, Judith Scott. I mean, James Purcell is your classic, like, captain, you know, just like, give me my coffee and I'm going to be here all night. And, mm-hmm. you know, let me make my, you know, tell the Andrew Dice Clay that we can't meet his demands. That's just too crazy that, you know, we can't do that in time or whatever. But Judith Scott was like this, like, you know, because she was the one who's sort of like the foil to the other computer person,
right.
Played by Karem Maliki Sanchez. And I thought like that as that foil to the other computer person, it was a very unique kind of way that it was played, where it was almost, she was just like, you know, like you said, she's the smartest person in the room, and she's, you know, like, you know, she's telling the captain something. He's like, well, do this and this. And she's like, actually, I'm already on it. I already did this,
yeah,
this,
right.
And this. And so, and then it's like she gets shot and she's having to tell everybody how to fix everything because they don't know like what they're doing. And she's having to be like she's like got a bullet wound and she's like laying on a gurney, like telling the other cops what to do, which I thought that was a really cool touch.
Oh, I got to mention one other cast member too, not because I thought he brought anything all that spectacular to the film, but when I recognized who it was, I was like, oh my gosh, flashback to my childhood. But the senator, yeah, of, you know, the father of one of the contestants, played by John Colicos. And I'm like, oh, that face, I know him. And then I realized he was Baltar on the original Battlestar Galactica. Oh. I was like, oh, I haven't thought about that in forever. So that was a fun revelation that I had on this.
Yeah, no, that was perfect. I you know, I always love that old, you know, the old Battlestar Galactica. I just always like, whenever that's on, I always get a kick out of watching that. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's talk real quick before we start kind of moving towards the break here and such. Just the action in general in this. I mean, it's, again, we're in a mid-90s direct-to-video. We're not going to have the action level of the actual Die Hard in this by any stretch. But, I mean, when it comes to the violence, I mean, the film actually does get pretty bloody, which was kind of surprising. Just, you know, they don't waste any opportunities to have like a big blood splatter on the wall behind someone that gets shot. You know, they do that. They resort to that a lot in this movie. And it's also odd that every person that gets shot, and a lot of people get shot in this movie, but I think every single one falls to the ground in slow motion.
Yes. Yeah, the shimmy too, right? They do the machine gun shimmy. Like Pfeiffer, yeah, has a really great machine gun shimmy for his death scene where he's just getting hosed down with assault gun fire. And he does a, you know, like you said, like that. And they, sometimes they fall through glass. Sometimes they just land on some stairs or something. Yeah, that's always really great there. I mean, I think the best scene for aficionados of this kind of thing is the Shannon Tweed, Andrew Dice Clay fight scene on the roof, which is just, it's equal parts funny and equal parts like, I don't know, like just unique. It's something that you don't go into a movie saying, oh, I hope there's going to be a Shannon Tweed, Andrew Dice Clay martial arts fight scene. But that's definitely a cool quirk of this film.
It is. And then what's weird is, I mean, that goes back to what you were speaking about before, how things just kind of keep going there in the big conclusion of the film, because you have that showdown on the roof. And then things kind of calm down for a minute, but then we got to bring Clay back one more time, and he fights with Shannon Tweed again, this time on top of a glass elevator as it's going up through the lobby of the hotel.
Right. Yeah. And I joked when I reviewed it, watching it again, it was like, yeah, he has a nice weatherman's death, right? Because he kind of falls through his green screen, you know, from the top of the elevator.
Well, speaking of falling too, I got to mention the probably the most shocking moment of the whole thing when it comes to the violence and the deaths and such is where one of the contestants who's being held hostage makes a run for it, and the wristband goes off, and she blows through the window and plummets to the ground. You see this body on fire, just plummeting to the ground. It is one of the most dramatic images from this whole film.
Yeah, and it's a really, like you said, it's very dramatic. It's like, you know, this flaming body like falling out of a building, but it's also, it plays on this like trope that you see in a lot of these movies where it's like the victim somehow plays a part in their own demise. And in her case, she can't handle being a hostage. So she just runs out of the room despite being told that, hey, everybody's got these explosive wristbands on that if anybody goes too far from somebody, they're going to blow up. And she, instead of, because she can't hold her cool, she can't, you know, because like everybody else who survives, right, they all, you know, sort of keep their cool. They look for their opportunities to strike at the baddies and then don't get retribution for it, right? They don't get killed or anything. And there's that sense that like it kind of makes it so we can almost feel better about her. But then when we see this flaming body like flying through the air, it's kind of like, I don't really feel better about it. It's like, it's not, you know, I don't know what I would do in a similar circumstance, but I think, you know, the fact that she didn't keep her cool and she tried to run away, is not like a reason for her to be blown up and tossed out of or she wasn't really tossed. She kind of explodes out the building. That was a rough death for sure.
Absolutely. Well, we should move it towards the break here. I give you one more chance for any final thoughts you have on this one.
No, I mean, I think, again, length is one of those things that's always a sticking point for me. But I think this is definitely, like you said, it's a good C-grade direct-to-video movie. And I think, for the things it does have, like the Andrew Dice Clay, Shannon Tweed fight, and Shannon Tweed as the hero, it definitely works in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, I'm not going to sit here and say this is amazing of the direct-to-video films I've seen. I wouldn't even call this, top tier. But I think for, being able to just sit down and chill out and just kind of zone out with a film that is not going to be anything too heavy, you just kind of roll with it. This is a good movie for that type of thing. I mean, I admit in my old age, I sometimes have struggles sitting down on the couch and not drifting off a little bit through the movies that I watch. But this one, I sat there, pretty interested for its whole running time. So as goofy as it was, it made for a fun evening.
Yeah, for sure. And sometimes that's all you can ask for, right? Especially this is like on a lot of free streamers here in the U.S. So it's an easy pickup.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's take a quick break here. We're going to hear from one of our podcasting pals here, and then we'll be back with our movie recommendations here on the Forgotten Filmcast.
You'll save money and time. You'll get the best of merchandise and service when you patronize these good neighbors. Shop with them regularly for friendly service and money-saving values.
Hey, let me interrupt the current podcast you're listening to so we can tell you about Musically Ignorant, hosted by me, Jason, and my pal, Lackey.
Hi, I'm Lackey.
We discuss all kinds of music from mainstream pop acts like Ben Folds and R.E.M.
and very obscure acts like Cabaret Voltaire and Black Moth Super Rainbow.
I think you just made those names up.
I most certainly did not.
Well, I guess that's why we named the show Musically Ignorant.
Indeed, you rapscallion!
Now, before Lackey turns too much into a 19th century professor, you should check us out on Anchor, Spotify, Apple, Google, or our home website, rabbitholepodcasts.com.
Jason, have you ever heard of this Lizzo person that's trending on Twitter?
Oh man, I got my work cut out for me.
Hello everyone, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Each week we review
the latest from Hollywood, California.
Well, yes, Brendan. We also
give top three lists.
Okay, yeah, thanks again, Brendan. Additionally, you can hear us
talk other movie news, trailers, varying movie series, or other interesting film-related topics, and even rants and raves of the week.
That's correct, Brendan. On top of our main show, every Friday,
you can also hear our extra film podcasts.
Good job, Brendan.
Thank you, JD. It's my goal to make you proud. You're the father, after all.
Yes, and I'm very proud. You can listen to the In Session Film podcast on
iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or at InSessionFilm.com.
Brendan, will you please let me complete just one?
Nope.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Listen to the In Session Film podcast every Monday and Friday. Subscribe today and hear me verbally beat JD like a Cherokee drum.
No. That's not how this works, sir.
Hey,
no.
Go cry at Midnight Special again, okay? That's what you're good for.
I will. You know what? And I'll do it while pummeling you. I'll do both at the same time.
How are you going to pummel me? Yeah, I don't buy it.
Hi, everybody. This is Todd. Just a quick reminder that you can help support the Forgotten Filmcast through Patreon. For just a few little old dollars a month, you can support this show and earn access to some great bonus features, including a bunch of the older episodes of this show, which are no longer available on the main podcast feed. Visit patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast to learn more.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat.
The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Okay, welcome back. It's time for our movie recommendations. This is where myself and my guest each share about another movie that we've enjoyed that we just want to let everybody else know about. It might be a forgotten film. It might be an old classic. It might be something that's new on a streaming service or in the theaters. It could be anything. So, Matt, what's your recommendation?
So my recommendation, and I kind of feel bad that the director and writer of this film, Nathan Hill, and also actor in the movie, I told him I would review this movie, and I reviewed it, and I still haven't emailed him to let him know I reviewed it on his site, so I feel horrible about that. But this movie that he did is called Revenge of the Guaylo. So just to give you a sense, Nathan Hill, he's a writer, director, actor from Australia, and he makes a lot of, you know, independent, low-budget films there. And this movie, Revenge of the Guaylo, that he made, it's a kind of a spoof on action movies, but yet at the same time, it's not so over-the-top spoofy. It almost feels like you're watching like a samurai cop or a Miami Connection or something like that. And the fact that someone was able to like successfully craft a movie like that without it seeming so over-the-top, for me, I thought was just really fantastic. And so the movie here in the States is on pretty much every major streamer. It's on Crackle. It's on Tubi. And it's, you know, again, Revenge of the Guaylo is the name. Guaylo, I guess, is a derogatory term for Asians give to white people in Australia, I think, because I don't mm-hmm. think it's a term that we have here in the U.S. And so, again, like the way the movie goes is the character, his wife is killed by the Asian mafia, so he kind of goes on a rampage to like get revenge for her. You know, he pulls some things from the movie Drive, so he's got like the coat with the scorpion. But yeah, it's got like some, you know, some goofy moments and some sort of like, you know, send up to action movies. But I think for people out there, you know, Nathan Hill, independent filmmaker, kind of trying to make a good go of it. This is a fun one to watch for sure.
Well, it took me a moment to find it because yeah. I had no idea how to spell Guaylo.
Guaylo. Yeah, so probably Nathan Hill is a better search. If you search Nathan Hill on Tubi or one of those, then you'll get Revenge of the Guaylo. It'll come up. Revenge of the whatever. You know, look for Revenge of.
Well, this is certainly a film that, first of all, I've never heard of before. But after Googling it, this is a case where the poster is enough to draw me in because, oh, my goodness, that is a crazy looking poster. I don't even know what I'm looking at on half of this poster, but I am intrigued. So, yes.
Yeah, it's funny with his movies because like I saw he wanted me to watch another movie of his called Lady Terror. And when I watched it, because I've seen so many bad movies that were done completely seriously that I was watching, and I was like, something's off about this. Like, I'm not really picking up like what's I feel like I'm missing something. So then I watched this movie and realized like, no, he does a kind of a tongue in cheek style, but it's subtle enough that, especially for us Americans, where sometimes we need to get hit over the head with our humor, or because, again, I've seen so many people be absolutely earnest and serious with an attempt like this, that this movie was the one that kind of got me a sense of how his humor works. And once I had that, I was like, okay, this movie really works.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, the movie that I'm going to recommend, I decided to kind of stick with the whole Die Hard ripoff theme. And I decided to go with something that basically I'm going to recommend this movie, but I am going to say right here that it is not a good movie. In fact, I would say this is one of the worst movies I have ever seen. The reason I'm recommending it is because a lot of times some of the worst movies you've ever seen turn out to be highly entertaining. And I think that is the case here. This is the film that asks the question, what would Die Hard be like if John McClane was played by Anna Nicole Smith? And of course, I'm talking about the 1996 film Skyscraper.
Yes.
Not the one with The Rock. No, this is the Anna Nicole Smith Skyscraper. She plays a helicopter pilot who shuttles people between LA high rises. And one of the buildings she visits ends up being under siege by a South African terrorist who is out to steal a device that is like one of four. And if you get these things together, then it will shift the balance of world power. It's like those boxes in Justice League, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, it's one of the most blatant Die Hard ripoffs because, I mean, this is, you can't even say this is like, you know, Die Hard but on a boat or Die Hard but on a train or whatever. This is just Die Hard with boobs, I guess. I don't know. Because the story is clunky. The acting is terrible, especially Anna Nicole Smith. I mean, we all know she's not a good actress. And I mean, it's actually fun to kind of watch the expressions on the other actors as they are just doing their best to try and salvage this thing. In fact, one of the great things to do after you watch this film is to go on YouTube and watch the blooper reel, and you can really see how much of a struggle this was. But I mean, it goes in some ridiculous directions. I mean, chief among them is the fact that this is an action movie in a confined space, and they have a voluptuous leading lady who the producers desperately want to get out of her clothes. And so, I kid you not, they literally do flashback love scenes so they can get her naked in this movie. It's just ridiculous. It is a terrible movie. I am not being hyperbolic when I say it is one of the worst movies I have ever seen. But because of that, it is very entertaining. You will laugh hysterically when you watch this film. You know, it is awful, but I guarantee you'll be entertained.
Yeah, I have to say, I love this movie. This is like in my top five for PM Entertainment film, because as an action movie, early in the film, you've got Malibu from American Gladiators. There's a scene early in the film where there's a sort of a confrontation in an alleyway, and you essentially get Malibu with just the vest and pants of a suit hosing down, like they're spraying Uzi fire everywhere. So the guys that are trying to escape, they back their car out of the alley through a Bud Dry truck, which everybody forgets Bud Dry. You know, why ask why? Try Bud Dry.
I mean, another thing that dates these movies, you know, flip phones and Bud Dry.
Exactly. I mean, just an absolutely amazing, amazing thing to happen. And I mean, to your point, when you watch the YouTube thing, one of the things you realize is that to help get Anna Nicole Smith over the finish line, she's a helicopter pilot, because they can feed her lines to her through her headset. Uh-huh. And that's how they can get the lines, which is just absolutely amazing as well. Yeah, this movie, I agree. I mean, I think it's on YouTube or Tubi as well. It is just an absolutely just fantastic film for sure.
Well, Matt, I want to thank you for being on the show. If you would please remind everybody of where they can find you and all the different projects you've got going on.
Yeah, so dtvconnoisseur.blogspot.com. That's the main site. That has links to everything. That is the podcast, my novels. My newest novel is Don's House in the Mountains. Just came out this week, actually. So you can find that on Amazon and Kindle or paperback. So actually, if you just go to Amazon and type in Don's House in the Mountains, you'll find the novel there. Three other novels that I've released are also available there. And then I got a short action novel called Bainbridge that it's sort of like a throwback to 90s actioners, kind of like a Skyscraper. It's you know, sort of PM Entertainment actioners, but it's about this detective named John Bainbridge, who cop on the edge kind of deal. So yeah, all those books and things, you can find them on Amazon. But also, if you go to my site, dtvconnoisseur.blogspot.com, you can find all the links there. And of course, the podcast, I try to post every Tuesday evening Eastern Time US. So that's you can, you know, find that on all your major podcatchers.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and I'll be back to close things here in just a moment here on the Forgotten Filmcast. Well, everybody, that's going to do it for episode 202 of the Forgotten Filmcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to read more reviews of Forgotten Films, you can find them over at the Forgotten Films blog. That's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z. And you can like Forgotten Films at Facebook. Of course, we welcome your questions, comments, and feedback about the show, so please email me at forgottenfilmcast@gmail.com. And while you're at it, why don't you leave us a positive comment over at iTunes or whatever service you use to listen to this show. And then don't forget about our Patreon page, patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast, where you can learn all about how you can help support this show. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you again real soon.
I don't understand. I kill several innocent people
threatened to blow up a building, and the police still don't take me seriously. Maybe taking over a beauty pageant isn't the best way to command respect.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.